My name is Wiley Jenkins. I'm currently with the Southern Illinois University School of Medicine, of all places. I took my 13 years of public health laboratory experience combined with my PhD in health policy and administration and decided to go to work in a medical school, where I'm actually director of research for the faculty member and director of research for family community medicine. I kind of with the idea that they wanted to bring population-based ideas, population-based theories, community ideas to the areas of primary health care, primary care research, and that's what I'm doing right now. What I'm going to present to you today is a little bit about my research I did for my dissertation. It's cost-effectiveness of GIS-based targeted chlamydia trachomatis interventions. Cost-effective for me is big because I'm a kind of a type A personality. I like to do a lot of things, but I'm also kind of a cheapskate. I like to think that what I do actually makes a difference and is also worth the time, and so that was kind of the basis for my interest in this project. I'll just kind of breeze through the introduction. For those of you who are at all involved in STD work or chlamydia, you know that basically a whole lot of people have it, and it's not going away anytime soon. It's the most commonly reported bacterial infectious disease in the United States. State case ranges anywhere from 141 to over 700 per 100,000 back in 2005, and that's going up. The vast majority of cases are asymptomatic, and leads to future morbidity, PID, chronic pelvic pain, infertility. And actually, specifically for Illinois, chlamydia incidence total statewide and also for Chicago has increased each of the past 9 years continuously. So it's an increasing problem. And of interest to me with my cost-effectiveness bent is that screening is a primary means of intervention. We actually do that in every county in Illinois in one fashion or another, testing by screening. But it's estimated that over 30% of those tests are utilized by those who are not at high risk. Health departments have a poor control over who they test and who they do not test, and so there's a lot of waste in how we're doing things. Plus, let's face it, after 9 years of steadily increasing rates, our status quo of how we intervene is not doing the job of either maintaining incidence or having it reduced. Therefore, the objective was to determine if a model of state and local health department cooperation for the provision of technical data and guidance for targeted interventions is effective and cost-effective in actually reducing local chlamydia incidence. And this basically leads to then two questions. One, if the state health department provides the technical assistance, can the local health department utilize this to reduce chlamydia? And if the incidence is in fact reduced, is this cost-effective? Is this a good way to do things? Just a little bit of background about the kind of technical assistance we were thinking about providing. In Illinois, local health departments are autonomous from the state health department, so they are not directly supported, so there's a wide range of skills, abilities, and resources available, and I'll speak a little bit more about that beforehand. But that's why the nature of doing a state-local health department model came to be an idea, is the fact that we don't have a natural link between the state and the local level. Multiple studies have shown that gonorrhea and chlamydia geographically cluster to varying degrees. This is also true with syphilis. Most of the studies show that gonorrhea actually does geographically cluster much more tightly than chlamydia. But some studies, specifically in Canada and a couple other places, do show that chlamydia does cluster geographically to some extent, while not nearly as much as others. Other researchers have shown that STD endemic levels depend upon a small group of people who are often termed the core, who are frequently infected. And so we have reason to think that there's a small number of people that maintain an epidemic in a small section of a population. That's the fourth bullet point. And finally, they've shown that interventions targeted to specific geographic locations can be effective and are useful complements to traditional control. And so the idea here is that, there is basis to believe that STDs geographically cluster. There's reason to believe that there's small sections of the population can maintain an endemic in a population. And there's also reason to believe that the way we're doing things right now, targeting an entire community for an intervention, is not necessarily effective because we're aiming at the wrong types of populations. And also that static interventions, like a whole local health department, may not be located in the best area to make a difference. Because if the core group or the geographic core is not there, then we may be missing an opportunity. Further background, as far as the literature searches for cost effectiveness, this I found to be quite interesting. Literature searches for the cost of pelvic inflammatory disease, the primary morbidity associated with untreated chlamydia, and then future morbidity returned a wide range of estimations. Really, depending on who you read, you get a lot of different values. And then a lot of work has also been done in other countries, such as the Netherlands, and so you have to take their cost and the translation from the euro into the US dollars into account. For this study, for my purposes, We actually utilized the values and ranges published by Ye et al. In 2003. They had several advantages I liked in that study compared to several others. These include the use of the societal perspective versus, say, the healthcare perspective. Societal perspective takes into account such things as opportunity costs for women who have to seek treatment, inequality, just the life years, and a lot of other things that the healthcare cost ignores. It looks at the lifetime time horizon versus, say, 5 or 10 year. Some of these future morbidity, most of them will be probably be incurred within 10 years, but not all of them. And so this is a much more inclusive time frame, I believe. And finally, they use a state transition model rather than a static model. And so their calculations were much more amenable to differences in rates, to recurrent infection, to treatment, and those types of things. And for my purposes as a public health professional, and at the time I worked for the state public health department when I was doing this study, the idea of looking at this much more holistically and from a public health perspective I found to be more in mind with my mission, if you will, to look at the public's health rather than a healthcare perspective. So it also turns out that the ranges that Ye et al. Came up with for costs were generally within range of their literature at large, and so it was not necessarily wrong to use them. We see here that Ye's value, just for an example, for PID was an average of about $2,100, and the literature gave the range of $1,900 to over $5,000. So Ye's value is within that range. For infertility, we see the cost and the range of values, cost, range of values, cost, range of values. And basically, for all these studies, sensitivity analysis showed that the cost of treatment, or the costs, are sensitive to rates of complications. You know, how often does untreated chlamydia progress to PID? How often does PID then progress to chronic pelvic pain, to infertility, to ectopic pregnancy? It's sensitive to the cost of treatment. Is it inpatient? Is it outpatient? Is it under an HMO? Is it under government-provided care? And then data source also can be a factor in that. So therefore, basically from the range found in the literature and from Ye's study, we came up with a treatment or a range cost of range of costs of anywhere from just over $1,000 to about $3,100, with essentially a middle value being the $2,150. And so those were kind of the costs that we used for the cost-effectiveness portion of this. Okay, to get an idea, a little further background on what we were wanting to do, is that local health departments, as I said before, are fairly autonomous entities. They currently rely on both local and Illinois Department of Public Health supplied case study and other advice to gauge their interventions, to work with the communities, and to advocate their screening. Case information that they have contains various demographic variables, race, age, gender, and address. And what we propose to add is geospatially map local case data. You would think that the local health department might intuitively know where the high pockets of chlamydia cases are. This turned out not to be the fact. And the partnering local health departments are actually surprised on a number of occasions to where the high concentrations of cases were located. Associated with this, these maps that we produced, we also gave them U.S. Census Bureau data associated with the census block groups where case concentrations resided. The idea being that we could give them some demographic information specific to a targeted area, and that may or may not be different from the county as a whole. So the whole point of all this is that the proposed model would present very specific data in very specific geographic areas where targeted interventions might have the greatest impact. So what we're trying here is to focus our energies in very small space, very small number of people, so that limited resources could be used for the greatest effect. To get an idea of what was going on at the local level, I did case studies at the state level with the health department there and what they did. And then I actually did case studies of 13 local health departments and received a whole bunch of data on actually what they do. And that's what these first three bullet points are, that we found the kinds of services the state provided, interviewed local health departments in these six different areas, types of activities. As I said before, local health departments are largely autonomous. Interventions that they do beyond screening, if they want to work with the community, are incredibly dependent upon local resources, upon their knowledge, skills, and abilities, and their budget, which in large part is based upon their population and local taxes. The state, as many of you may realize, has resources available there beyond the reach of the local level. The state possesses GIS software. Now that, for the state, is a trivial expense to purchase ArcGIS 9.0 with 10 user licenses. That's fairly trivial. However, for a local health department with an operating budget of less than $100,000 a year, that's a major expense and is beyond their reach. So we theorized that the provision of otherwise unavailable data to a local health department would enable them to target limited resources more effectively than they would on their own. It's not necessarily that they can't come up with the information, it's just that they don't. They don't have the time, the skills, or the resources to do it. And so if we provide this, can they do something useful with it to reduce their incidence? Participating counties, selection criteria is based on 2005 data. We essentially had three criteria for inclusion in the study. One is the presence of one relatively large city, and we see here the population range. We wanted at least one city to have enough sample counts, enough cases that we could actually hopefully see a difference from one year to the next. Relative geographic isolation, minimum of 25 miles to another day. And the thing we want to avoid here is bridging populations, people traveling from one town to another and potentially diluting the effect of the intervention. And we figure with rural communities, 25 miles is a fair distance. I mean, you've got separate school districts, you've got separate social circles, and we thought that would be sufficient. Finally, a relatively high incident rate compared to the state. Now, admittedly, these are based on convenience and expected requirements. We had only so many health departments were even willing to participate, and we had only so many health departments and counties that really kind of met these criteria that we had five participating counties, those are on the left, and then we basically matched them with five case counties, and you see those on the right. Matching of cases to controls is based on increasing rate. The other factors were considered. We looked at age distribution, racial distribution, all those other things, and in the bottom line, we decided that the most unbiased way to match a case of control is by annual count or annual case rate, and we see those, the annual counts and the rates there before. So that's admittedly imperfect, but it was the best we could come up with. Geocoding. Case addresses were geocoded using ArcGIS. For any of you who have ever done geocoding with things, you know that your data is not perfect as much as you would like it to be. So not all cases were successfully located. And this turned out to have the completeness of geocoding ranged anywhere from 92% located in Winnebago County to a low of only 71% being located in McLean County. So we have almost a third of all cases were unlocatable, if you will, in McLean County, and this raised some concerns. You know, what type of population are we missing here with our maps? And since the maps are crucial to targeting our resources, knowing why some cases are geocoded and some are not can have a difference. So the data were compared to determine if there were any biases in which cases were geocoded and which were not. I mean, if almost a third of your cases aren't being geocoded, are they significantly different than those who are? Age, we did a t-test of means for those who are geocoded and those who are not, and only one county had a significant difference, and that difference is only approximately a year. 22.8 non-geocoded versus 21.4. For us and for our purposes, we did not consider this to be a really significant figure or factor. Gender, again, males were coded 1, females were coded 2, and t-test for equality show there's no difference. So genders were equally coded and non-geocoded. Race turned out to be a different matter. Chi-square analysis showed that three counties had significant differences in how the races were geocoded. And in all three cases, blacks were more likely to be geocoded, and unknowns, which is a small subgroup, were less likely to be found. So what this told us is that we had overrepresentation of cases of black race, which can have an impact due to racial segregation in living patterns. And so this had to be taken into account that blacks were overrepresented in some counties for our maps. Cases were located into census block groups, which were then stratified into five levels by both total case number and case concentration. Stratification levels were determined by the Jenks method. I chose the census block group because that's the smallest area in the Census Bureau that you can get reliable data from. And it's small enough that hopefully you can target something more to a 6-8 square block area than, say, to a census tract, which can be much larger in size. The Jenks method of stratification, basically all that does is it takes your continuum of values and looks for natural breaks. And this turned out to be fairly useful because all the counties that we used had either two or three census block groups in the very top tier. Only two or three, so that allowed us to readily identify where we might want to put our resources. Map sets for each participating county were then produced, and each set included multiple views of the county, closer views of the city, and then street level views of high concentration census block groups. Now the purpose here is not necessarily to produce a statistically significant cluster, something very high-tech on the order of a SAT scan analysis where you've got a tight little circle. The idea here is to produce something useful that the health department could use to identify where a high concentration was, to mobilize local partners, to inspire. One county actually posted these on the walls within their health department and used them to inspire their own workers in things. So the idea was to make this a practical tool and not necessarily an academic tool. Case data summaries. Local case data was summarized and broken down into tables and charts as an aid to developing the intervention, and Census Bureau data on population, income, and education, and selected census blocks. Block groups are collected and provided. Again, the whole goal of this was just to provide a tool for the local health departments. Are the populations in, say, a target area different than in the county as a whole? Are there significant differences? Is there a significant difference in race, income, education, those kinds of things? Here's just a brief overview of the different types of interventions. Each county could do their own intervention. It was entirely up to them what they do. My question, can they do something useful? What they actually do is up to them. And the important thing here is that all were performed without any type of supplemental funding. I was just a poor college student. I had no money to give them. And so they agreed to perform this experiment with their own resources, for which I'm truly thankful. But that kind of diluted the effect of what they could have done. So they had 10 weeks to do it, and then we sat back to wait for the results. This proved to be somewhat difficult. We used time series modeling initially to try and determine if there was an effect. We took 5 years worth of data, 60 data points at a monthly time frame, and used ARIMA time series modeling to look for a difference. We see here our model parameters, and this was all done in SPSS to determine it, and we found a good model for each health department and for each county. However, high monthly variance contributed to models with poor predictive ability. The mean absolute percent error ranged from anywhere from 15 to 58%. And so that means that if you've ever seen STD rates for a small county, they jump all over the place. And so you could have a half-decent model that matched it, but the error rate was so large that we would predict, say, 60 cases for a month, but the confidence interval would be anywhere from 18 to 140 cases. I mean, just a huge window, which means that with such wide confidence intervals, every observed count was within the confidence interval. So the bottom line is that time series modeling for this specific application was not useful. It was a wonderful experience to learn how to do it, but it didn't turn out to be terribly useful. Okay, next what we did is we observed case data post-intervention were compared to data pre-intervention and also of the same time period the year before to look for historical effects. And we used 4-month and 8-month time spans then to examine before and after. Chi-square, no significant difference for cases versus controls. Next, we did t-test analyses for each individual county, again, for the same types of time spans, before and after, and also for the year before. One control county experienced significant differences, but maybe due to county-city health department merger that year. So bottom line is we didn't find any significant difference. Man, we were bummed out, to be sure. However, we did do a cost-effective analysis in addition to this, and here are some of the things that we talked about. We looked at direct costs, indirect costs, then the cost from the literature of chlamydia. For each health department, the wages and personnel time is the greatest of all their expenditures, basically their time that they put into this. And the total cost ranged anywhere from $726, it was one county's investment, and another county did over $10,000 worth of time, which is very enthusiastic of them, to say the least. They performed very, very intensive partner notification for people that tested positive within their areas. They weren't quite to the point of stalking them, but they were going after them with everything they had, and they put a lot of manpower into partner notification. And unfortunately, it didn't work out very well for them as far as making a difference. Here is, I think, what the most interesting part of the entire study is the cost-effective analysis here. We took basically a best-case scenario for disease and cost, and a worst-case scenario for disease and cost. And so what we did here is, let's say untreated chlamydia progresses to PID 10% of the time. The range of literature is from 10 to 50%. So if we use the low end of progression, 10%, and combine that with the low end of cost, the cost range is typically from just over $1,000 to just over $3,000, we can see here that Champaign County, given their intervention cost of just over $1,600, would have to avert 20 cases annually to be cost-effective for what they did. Worst case scenario, if half the cases of untreated chlamydia progress to PID and it costs the most expensive to treat it, Champaign County only needs to avert 2 cases in a given year. Well, what that means percentage-wise is that Champaign County can reduce their incidence by only 2%. They've made this cost-effective. Now, seeing how difficult it is to find a difference, we find here a quandary that, look at all these percentages. If we make minuscule differences in the incident rate, our interventions have paid for themselves, and more so. And so we found this to be very, very interesting, that the potential to be cost-effective is huge. Limitation sample size, we only had 5 counties. Selection of cases, admittedly, they're based somewhat on convenience. So the cases were based on those health departments willing to participate that met our criteria. Case control matching, subject to bias. Geocoding was not equivalent between counties. Blacks were more likely to be geocoded, but not in every county. There were differences in that. Intervention, duration, only 10 weeks. Intensity, with no supplemental funding, they could hardly do a multimedia blitz of the entire community or a specific area. They basically had to rely on their existing resources. Consistency, generalizability. It's hard to compare oranges to apples to pears. So what we might do in the future is ask each health department to do the same. And then finally, forecasting and sample variance was forecasting was difficult due to the sample variance. Basically, we believe this can work. More to explore, how do we make an annual incident decrease of 1% statistically significant? This, I think, is going to be huge for us, because I believe that if we can actually subsidize interventions to make a greater impact in duration, we can show that this is cost-effective. But again, with such a minuscule difference required to be cost-effective, that is going to be our problem. We need to evaluate interventions for implementation effectiveness. That was not done in the study, but we identified it should be done. And then we need to standardize them to be able to compare the results. And that is it.